What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producers Corner with Spud Too Tight. Man, I got another hot show for you. On the phone with me, man, I have a very talented recording artist who is no stranger to writing and performing hit records. He was the lead singer of the R&B group Public Announcement and has collaborated with some of the biggest heavy hitters in the R&B and hip-hop community, from R&B legend Keith Sweat to hip-hop MC Twista. Please put your hands together for multi-platinum recording artist and songwriter, Felony Davis. What's happening,
yo,
Felony?
Yo, hey, what's up? What's up, Spud? How's it going, man?
Oh, man, I'm doing good, man. Pleasure to have you on my show, dude.
Absolutely. Pleasure's mine.
Man, before we start the show, Felony, I just got to take my hat off to you, man. One of the favorite tracks that I like, man, that you've done, was some of your older work, but it's still hot. Mamacita, man.
Oh, wow. Thanks. Yeah, that was... That was a hot one for us. Yeah, definitely.
You know, the thing that still got with me with Mamacita was, you know, the bounce that the deliverance and vocally that you delivered, man, and the rhythm and the composition of the track just has so much bounce and funk and street edge to it, man. It's a lot of the tracks that I do have those type of Ellis, man, so I immediately just gravitated to that track. So
I feel you. No doubt. Yeah, I think at that time, I think that music was kind of in that direction. I think, you know, Cisco was doing the thong song thing, and, you know, it was just that whole bouncy type of that delivery. So it actually worked, which was definitely something different for Public Announcement at that particular time. You know, the guy, Trevon Potts, he's out of Atlanta. He produced that record for us. So, you know, it was different kind of, you know, music. So, you know, we decided we take a chance on it. You know, we was trying to do the up-tempo thing, and that particular record, it did work out for us.
Man, well, it smashed the airways, man, and, you know, with the video and everything was just hot overall, man.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, for everyone who's listening, Felony, give me, you know, a place when you started, you know, really focusing and taking this as a full-time career path in the music industry, man. When did you start out, and, you know, what led you into becoming an artist and also writing for other artists as well?
Well, I started probably, I want to say, about the early 90s, 90, 91. I was a part of a local group out of Chicago by the name of JMJ. And we were doing local shows around Chicago, Park District shows, and we were picked up by a manager's guy by the name of Kevin Shine, and he knew a lot of people, so he actually took us out of Chicago, took us to New York, met some people, we were all in the projects in New York, singing in the projects. We ran into this guy by the name of Donald D, and he was a really big name in the music industry at that time. May he rest in peace. He knew SWV and a lot of people over at RCA, Skip Milner, when he was over there. And he took us around to a lot of different labels. We sung for labels and that type of thing. And we actually landed a situation on the Apollo. We did Wednesday night Apollo, which didn't air. And then we took second place, lost to this guy who sung Luther Vandross. We went on to do Showtime because of, I guess, you know, there was a bunch of pretty boys in the group. So, you know, it's television and they want that whole thing. We were able to actually perform on the Apollo as JMJ. And they had these rules at the Apollo and this whole New York thing. Well, you can't tell them. They told us, they said, well, you can't tell them that you're from Chicago because, you know, New York don't like Chicago. You can't sing an a cappella song. You have to have a track, and you can't sing anything original. You have to sing something that everybody knows. We did all of the opposite. We told them that we were from Chicago. We did something a cappella and something that we wrote, and we won three times on the Apollo.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was kind of incredible, and that kind of blew us up a little. We were walking around New York with our JMJ jackets on, with our little fame. And then things moved on from there. People saw the group. The group disbanded, and we started kind of moving on. A group was developed out of that group by the name of Concrete Level, myself and another member by the name of Juwan Williams. And we went on to land a little situation with an independent label by the name of Pocket Town out of New York. And they pushed us a little further. We did a little national touring with this group called Nothing Nice. They signed them off to Jive. They was on the More Money soundtrack with a song called I think it was In My Nature or Froggy Style or something like that. And we toured with them a little bit, and we toured with Prince, and just kind of getting a little more exposure after that. You know, I think the label kind of disbanded, and we met a lot of people that kind of put us out there as far as networking. We met a lot of people, and after that, somebody approached me about the public announcement situation. I think it was maybe a year or so after that, public announcement broke up. R. Kelly went on to do, I think, 12 Play after the Born Into the 90s album, because I wasn't with public announcement during the Born Into the 90s album. I joined public announcement after R. Kelly left and the group was looking for a new lead singer. So I came aboard because I thought that was just perfect, because these guys had toured with R. Kelly all over the world. The name Public Announcement was just as big as R. Kelly. Right. So I said, if I get with this group and I could help them out in any kind of way, I don't see where we could go wrong. So I immediately joined, and that's where Body Bumping was born. Actually, I recorded that record, and that record was playing in Chicago like crazy, and there was no group, because I think three of the members had left the group, and it was only myself and this guy by the name of Earl, who's the original member from Public Announcement. But I had recorded the Body Bumping song solo. That was a solo record of mine, but they was playing it all over Chicago and saying that it was Public Announcement, but there was actually no group. So we had to run out and put a group together real fast, and, you know, then we had a showcase, and, you know, things just kind of went from there. So that was basically my start. You know, I think that was about 96, 97, something like that. That's when the major things started happening. We got, there was a bidding war for Public Announcement. We had about five or six labels actually bidding for the group, which doesn't happen now. You got to pretty much do everything yourself now before they even look at you.
Right.
But it was a blessing to actually have the opportunity to, you know, be in the music industry and R&B at that particular time, because that shows pretty much a dedication to R&B right now as an artist. You know, you have to record to the reel to reel and the ADATs. You know, they didn't have all these
the auto systems.
You know, you have to go in there and grind, man. You have to put it down. You know, when you came out of there, it had to be right. They didn't have anything to fix it. So them long hours in the studio and stuff like that, and it just taught me how to actually be a professional in the studio and also on stage. That's why when I perform my shows, I always sound just like the record, because I'm used to going in and making it sound like it should sound, you know. So, I mean, that was, like I said, again, that was a blessing to be able to be a part of that 90s R&B extravaganza. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, we was in the 90s, we were putting it down, man. You know, Lex, Drew Hill, Jodeci, Boyz II Men, you know, that whole era, H-Town, Intro. Man, you know, that was, you know, it was
Black Street, 90s. Silk.
Black Street. Yeah, we was killing it. You know, yeah. So it's just a blessing, man, to be able to. And then sometimes you run across a lot of these young artists now, and you know, they find out who you are, and they look up to you. You know, man, you guys paved the way for where R&B is today, and we really need some of that, you know, that truth R&B back. You know, the love music, and, you know, the music that's substance. You know, the music, it's not quick music. You know, that, you know, it's here today, going tomorrow. You know, there's no publishing now. Where do these artists get publishing? you get publishing from songs that stand the test of time. These songs are here today and gone today.
Right.
So who's getting publishing?
That's right.
You know, so, you know, it's really weird. But, you know, I support all of the music. You know, I started all old school artists, you know, Stevie Wonder, Donny Hathaway, Luther Vandross, all these guys that paved the way for, you know, what we were doing. And, you know, so that's basically it, you know, and it's a love for it. It's just a passion. I do it if it didn't pay the bills, you know. It's just, you know, just something that I love to do, you know.
No, I agree with you 100%, man. You know, I talk a lot about on my show about artist development and being really studio groomed as an artist, or even as a session musician. I mean, a lot of people say, what are you even talking about, Spud, studio groomed? I was like, well, you know, if you're coming off the street and you've never had studio experience, you know, the terminology, the language that we talk, you may not catch up on it as quick. You're not going to be you're not going to be as seasoned as dropping those tracks, those 16 bars, you know, one hit a quarter as fast, man. You're going to be really choppy. It's going to take you more time. So I always tell guys that, man, if this is your first time going to the studio, plan on being there a good 8-9 hours, man. Oh, no.
Exactly,
no,
right.
I can do it. No, you're going to be there a couple of hours, man. Trust me.
Right. You're exactly right.
You know, as strong as a lead vocalist you are, Felony, Give me some of the influences that really paved the way for you as a recording artist and a songwriter. I mean, I think everyone has different musical influences for different jobs and things that you can relate to as an artist.
Right, right. Well, I know I grew up listening to, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of the, you know, the old crooners. I know Stevie Wonder would play over, you know, in my home, and Donny Hathaway. It was funny, Donny Hathaway played a lot, and his music, I could recall as a kid, just the production. I mean, his voice was like an instrument, but his production was, a lot of his music was very, was eerie. You know, it was, I don't know what was going on, but a lot of his music just had this real soulful. When my sisters and brothers would play Donny Hathaway, it would literally make me feel, I don't know, sad or scared or something like that, but that would force me to listen to him as a vocalist, you know, and to kind of try to mimic some of the stuff that he would do, and I would play those records, and Stevie Wonder, you know, I would hear him a lot. I know I could recall listening to the Commodores, you know, Lionel Richie, you know, the just all of those guys, Lakeside,
oh, yeah.
you know Prince, you know, them guys, you know, just that real soulful. And then my parents, you know, they listened to, I guess, the real soul part of it. You know, my parents listened to like B.B. King and Bobby Blue Bland and Johnny Taylor, you know, so that's, I guess that's kind of like where the that homegrown soul thing came from. But it's, I mean, you become a product of what you listen to, you know, and it's just kind of that. I think a lot of people will tell me, well, Felony, it's crazy. Your tone is just so different. It's different. You don't really sound like anybody in particular, but it's soulful. You know, then a lot of people will compare me to R. Kelly. I think that thing happened because I joined Public Announcement, and Earl, he was the producer, and he actually learned how to produce under R. Kelly. So a lot of the stuff that he produced sounded like R. Kelly, so it kind of forced me to kind of go in that direction. And it also worked for Public Announcement because people thought the body bumping and a lot of the stuff that we did was R. Kelly. So people was like, wow, you know, you didn't do R. Kelly Public Announcement record, but it was not R. Kelly. It was Public Announcement. So that worked, you know, but overall, a lot of the other stuff that as you go down some of the other albums and stuff, you actually hear Felony, you know, my true sound, you know, actually when I became used to it, because I didn't like it at first because it was like you had to sound like a Stevie Wonder or this person or that person. But, you know, my sound was just so different. And then I think once Dave Hollister once told me, I think we first came out, we were in Florida. We had a show in Florida, and he was signed to Eric Sermon and Eric, I think Def Jam or
Death
something
Squad.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when he saw me, he was like, yo, he told me, said, yo, come here, man. And Eric Sermon was right there. And he said, man, did you hear this guy's record, that body bumping record? And so Eric was like, yeah. He said, man, this guy's, and I didn't understand what he was talking about. He said, man, this guy, your tone is crazy, man. He said, I never heard a tone like that before. And I was like, wow. But David Hollister was like one of my idols, you know, at the time. So I'm like, whoa. And I think that's when I kind of started believing in myself and my sound after I got that from David. So my confidence started, you know, building, and I started trying to do other things vocally and stuff like that, you know. And the writing aspect, actually, believe it or not, came from a guy who I was in a local group with, this guy by the name of Jawan Williams. He was in a group with me, the JMJ group, and he and his cousin would write together all of our songs. They were very good ballad writers. They wrote, like, they would listen to Babyface and I'll Be Sure and that whole thing. Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis was hot then, and they would listen to those guys and write songs, you know, similar to those. And I would try to write ballads and stuff like that, and they were like, nah, because I was listening to some other kind of music. So I would bring my ballads, and my ballads would sound like slow up-tempo songs. So they would just be like, nah, man, that ain't it. And they would always send me away and say, keep trying. So where I found my niche was through up-tempo songs. So they would write the ballads, and I would write the up-tempo songs because they didn't know how to write up-tempo records. Mm-hmm. So I would kind of speed. I wouldn't change my songs since they said they sounded like up-tempo ballads, I would just sing them faster.
Right.
And that's how I started writing, basically, the whole up-tempo thing. And then as I listened and watched what they did more, I started kind of listening to that kind of music, because I'm more of a, I'm an up-tempo guy. I'm a, you know, I'm a, you know, I'm a, you know, a fast cookie, you know.
Yeah,
I'm,
me
know,
too. Me too, man.
And, yeah. So, you know, that's the kind of music that I enjoy. You know, the ballads, that was cool. You know, I listened to them, but to write to, you know, I just wrote basically according to the kind of music that I was listening to. And then when I started listening to the ballads and kind of getting into that, the whole format of how they did that, you know, up-tempo was pretty much verse, hook, you know, breakdown or whatever. And then, you know, the ballads, you have to learn how to do changes. And that was like, oh, my God.
What? Right. Totally different arrangement. You
know? Yeah. You know, so I'm like, how do they do that? So I studied and I listened and came back, and they'd send me away. I would come back again. And then they was like, after a while, they're like, whoa, you kind of got something right there. So once I came into my own niche, and then writing for public announcement, that kind of seasoned me a little more, because they weren't as critical. They were just happy to know that they had another lead singer. So it didn't matter what I wrote. They was like, well, it's cool, you know. So I was able to kind of practice a little more on with public announcement. And then that's where the sound and the whole vibe of writing and my style of writing came about.
You know, as a songwriter, man, you know, I like talking to different songwriters because everybody has such a different flavor and spices when they write. When you usually get a song in your mind, are you usually writing for yourself, or are you kind of just looking for artists in mind, or just kind of like whatever is going to fit for that artist or myself, it's going to be something?
Right. I understand. It depends on what it is, you know. You know, of course, you know, you're always looking for the hottest and the best stuff for yourself. So sometimes, you know, you come up with concepts and ideas, and it's something that, you know, sometimes you come up with things that may be in the box, and sometimes you come up with concepts and ideas that may be out of the box. And usually the stuff that's out of the box, I kind of keep for myself and just kind of, you know, push it off to the side or whatever, you know. But the, you know, the stuff, I mean, that's basically it. If it's out the box and it's something just totally different, but it's doable, it's workable, then I usually keep that stuff for myself.
All right. Now, speaking of coming and writing in the box and without the box, is there a particular format that you use when you're songwriting and doing your compositions? Or you kind of just let the creativity run its course and then you shape it at the end?
Right. That's how I do it. Well, basically, I'm just learning how to, not just learning, but as of recently, to write without music, you know, just kind of write in my head. You know, I'll usually just come up with like concepts. You know, I try to use, you know, different sayings, and people say, you know, everyday sayings, and use those type of things for ideas and concepts, maybe hooks or whatever. And I'll have those things like put away. And then once I get the music or whatever, then, you know, I write based upon, I think I let the music kind of guide me to what I'm going to actually talk about, my tones or whatever, because sometimes the chords may be happy. Some chords could be dark, you know, so I kind of use the music to tell me, you know, where I'm going to go with it, like vocally, or what I'm going to write about or whatever like that. Because, you know, music to me, actually, that's a song in itself. When a person, or if you bring me a track or some production and I'll listen to it, you know, it's a song in itself. You know, it says something, and it's just, I guess, up to you to kind of find it. You know, you just can't put, you know, anything over, you know, a compilation or a track or whatever. It has to be a marriage. And it's been a lot of times where I've actually went in on one track or one compilation, maybe four or five different times to actually nail it, you know. And I think you just kind of know when you know.
Right. I do. As a producer, man, I talk about a lot, a formula that I use pretty much on every artist that I work with, because it's been successful. And it changes every time with artists that I work with. You know, I'll have, let's say if you and I work together, you'll get a basic foundation track, something that you can write to just to get your flavor started and get some ideas popping. You come in, lay the vocals in the studio. As soon as you leave, man, I strip all the music down to nothing. And what I usually do, I just center in on the vocals, and I get inspired by the harmonies and the lead vocals, and I produce the music around your vocal deliverance. So the next time you hear, it's like, man, I want to do something different. And then from that point, man, we start building the song together. Because at that point, man, you start getting your own identity as an artist for me, you know.
Exactly. And that's the best way to do it. That's just like, sitting down at that keyboard, you know, and you got that keyboard player there. And he's just kind of, you know, rolling through them chords and stuff like that, and you're just kind of putting it together. You can't lose that way.
No.
When you do it from scratch, you're exactly right. Actually, I was listening to one of your interviews. I think it was with, what's his name? Mario Winans.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one. That was a real hot interview. You know, how you guys went back and forth about that. And I recall you actually explaining that concept to him. And I was like, wow, that's kind of neat right there. So actually what I did was I went back to my producer and I I gave him that concept.
Cool.
So that's so we started actually working that way, and the songs actually started coming out like a lot better, a lot tighter, you know, because he didn't think about it that way, because, you know, he's a young producer. So he'd give me a track or whatever and I write to it, you know, he's like, wow, you know, it's just hot, it's only writing to it. And I'm like, but I'm hearing, I'm like, man, it could be a lot tighter, you know.
Right.
So when I brought that to him and he started like stripping the music down and like reproducing all over, it became a lot tighter. And now we actually started getting a few songs placed after that too as well.
It works for both sides, man. You know, and I always tell producers, season and upcoming, it's like, man, I never get too attached to my compositions where I can't make alterations and edits and changes for the artist.
Right.
That's it, because at the end of the day, man, the song is really for you guys. You
know what I mean? Right. So. Right, exactly. Yeah, I know a couple producers that have that attitude, you know, when it's done, you know. But, you know, my thing is, okay, it's just production, okay? At the end of the day, you still need a whole song. So if you're not willing to make any adjustments to it now, all you have is just production right there, you know? So sometimes you have to go back in and, you know, make some changes and add and take away some stuff, you know, just to make the song 100% whole and pure.
Definitely. Now, do you got any experience playing the boards, or are you strictly a singer-songwriter, vocalist?
Well, yeah, singer-songwriter, you know, vocalist, I kind of play around with chords, you know, and if I catch some nice chords, then I'll record them and, you know, just kind of pitch them to my producer, and he just kind of run with it. But I'm not a 12 finger guy.
Right. I got
Yeah. Not like you, man. I heard some of your stuff, man.
Oh, thanks, man.
As a matter of fact, we're gonna chop it up, but I'm gonna need you to send me some stuff so that we can start working.
Oh, that'd be lovely, man. I'm with you. I already know your flavor, so I got a nice library for you, brother.
right.
You know, man, I want to back up a little bit because you talked a little bit about some of the analog recording formats that you were on. Now that we're in the world of DAW recording, are you still on analog, or are you converted over to the DAW world of recording now?
Yeah, we stepped it up, man. So, you know, you gotta make those adjustments, you know, even though, you know, I call it cheating, you know.
Right.
So even though, you know, we're doing the Pro Tool thing, and, you know, he has the whole auto tune, and this other thing I was introduced to, man, I can't think of the name of it. I was just recording with this guy, but this thing is more incredible than the auto tune. This particular machine can take a horrible note. You know, the auto tune kind of like, you know, you got to kind of like be somewhere in the area to fix it.
Right.
But this particular machine can take this program can take a horrible note and just kind of like put it where it needs to be. And actually, the guy that I was working with, this guy's name is Earl Powell. And he did some stuff for, what's her name? Jennifer Hudson.
Okay.
And he just said, well, I'm going to show you how it works. He said, so give me like one of your worst notes. So I'm like, man, how do you sing off note? You know, he said, just give me a crazy note. I did something spacey, and he grabbed it and fixed it and made a perfect note. I was like, wow. I said, that's just unfair, man. You know what I'm saying? I was like, that is like, who, I mean, so now who can't be a recording artist? Who can't? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, who can't be a superstar? There's no excuse now.
But you know what, though? All the tools are there. And I always say this, man. You're great as a studio musician, but when we get on that stage, how good of a performing artist are you?
But there you go. That's what I'm talking about. That's what they say. If it don't come out in the wash, it'll come out in the rinse.
Hey, there you go, man. There's a difference.
You know, right. You hit that stage, it's like, uh-oh.
You're fully exposed at that stage.
Hey, Spud, you said lead the vocals on the track.
Hey, there we go. We'll run this as an instrumental, this track, man.
right. Yeah, I can recall that, but man, I just call it cheating, man. I'm like, but it's just the way the world, you know, technology, and it's constantly growing. But you know what I do? I just kind of stick to the roots. You know, I stick to the roots. My guys like, man, you know, don't worry about it. You know, one take, and I'm like, oh no, man, it's got to sound right when I leave out of here. Now, whatever you do when I go home, then you do. But when I leave out of this booth, it's going to sound right to me. It's going to sound right coming from my voice to you. So I just try to stay old school with it, with my attitude, my mental attitude inside the studio. I don't go in and say, okay, I don't feel like singing. I'm going to give you something crazy and just fix it and, you know, whatever. No, I don't do that. I'm old school, man.
Right. Me too, man. I talk a lot about him. You probably heard, man. I'm a huge Teddy Riley fan, man. I mean, he's
okay.
The guy that really just laid it all for me, man. Because I was a musician starting off, man, and only person that I could identify as a producer was Quincy Jones. You know,
okay.
But my guys in the hood who are my age didn't really know a lot about Quincy, man, but they knew about Teddy Riley, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And immediately, man, I just gravitated to his style of production. And
you know,
it's one thing, is like you say, you're paid for the way and you give thanks to people, man. But it's another thing to study somebody, you know, and mm-hmm. really implement those ways of production, man. So, you know, he's the guy that's really laid it out for me, man. So,
man, you couldn't have gravitated to a better person, man. Teddy Riley changed the game.
Yes.
He was one of the producers that changed the game, man. You know,
yes.
You know, I mean, you know, you find very few producers who actually, you know, your producers come and go quick. You know, do their thing and then they out, you know. But Teddy Riley was one of those stay guys. He actually changed the music, like Quincy Jones changed it. You know, Teddy Riley is in that. Then you find, I would even say Devontae from Jodeci.
Oh, yeah, Devontae, you know, Swing. Oh, yeah.
You know, changed. You know, you got guys that, you know, that actually changed music, you know, had a very big impact on music. Teddy Riley was definitely one of them cats, man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what he did, some of the stuff that he did, this cat, I think he was one of the originators of creating his own sounds, right?
He was the originator of New Jack Swing.
Ambassador. People were like, what the heck is that? Is he using for that snare drum?
Right.
Yeah, I can recall that, man. I can recall studying and listening to some of that guy's stuff, too. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Incredible.
You know, so, man, what's on the musical agenda for 2010, man? I know you got some singles out there. You're on the mission of becoming another star again.
I'm pushing.
Making that 360-degree turn, man. You know what's nice?
No doubt.
I look at you guys, man, from the 90s, and, you know, all you guys to me are like my big brothers, man. I always kind of looked at you guys like, man, these guys are doing it. You guys can come and go as you please, just because you're so seasoned as an artist and a musician. You know what I mean? So there's always, to me, I think there's always going to be a space for you in the music.
Thanks, man.
Yeah,
thanks.
Man.
Appreciate it.
That vocal tone, man, it's one of a kind. There's nobody out there that's got that Fellini Davis vocal style, in my opinion.
Oh, man. I appreciate it. I'm glad I finally became confident with it, you know, because there was a time when I was all over the place just trying to find where I needed to be, and it was pretty much always there, you know. Music, you know, it does a 360-degree turn. It turns, and, you know, different things come and go. Like where music is now, you know, you had the easy, you know, I call it popcorn type R&B. And now you got this real R&B music that's coming back, you know, because I mean, these kids, they like it, but they're not buying it.
Right.
You know, they're not going to the stores and purchasing this music, man. And it's just crazy. So my thing is, well, I'm going to go and and resurface my fan base of people who I know are going to the store and buying music, or who are actually looking for real music.
Right. Come and I'm going to reconnect.
I'm going to reconnect to them, and then I'm gonna give them something fresh to go out and purchase and buy. You know, well, I have a project that's due to be released soon. I want to say hopefully midsummer, in the end of summer. The project is called The Weeknd, and it's just that. You know, I mean, I feel like, you know, when you're doing music, you're doing an album or CD or whatever, it has to be you. It has to, the people have to be able to listen to the music and identify the music with you, your spirit, the type of person that you are. So, you know, like I told you, I'm a hot jumper. You know, I like to go out, I like to kick it, have fun. I'm a fun, lively type person. So the music on this particular album definitely reflects that. It's called The Weeknd, you know, and it just talks about everything under the sun. You know, I got a joint on there called Busted, which is a hot club track, and it's just about just being in the club. And, you know, that's a catchphrase. You know, you drink too much, you know, you walking out of the club, that's what it is, you know. I got another joint on there, it's called Catch 22. Just going through relationships, you know, you're with your girl, and, you know, she don't know what she want. You know, you care about her, she care about you today, but then later on in the day, she don't. So what is it? Got another song on there called I Ain't Going Nowhere. It's about, that song is, I think that'll be a female's anthem. It just talks about how men, which is the opposite, people are saying men are always leaving their children and, you know, going, you know, leaving the family and stuff like that. Well, this song speaks the opposite. It talks to the ladies and let them know that, you know, you don't have to worry, you and my child going to be fine, because I'm going to be here. I'm going to stick around. I'm not going nowhere. I'm going to be here for you and, you know, that whole thing. So I think that'll be a ladies anthem, that one. I'm trying to think. All Woman. Yeah, I have one called All Woman, which is would be another ladies anthem. It just speaks of everything that a woman want to be and wish she could be and beyond. You know, it's just, right. You know, just you know, but just the standard kind of, you know, true R&B music, but, you know, the production is, you know, where it needs to be. And I'm just kind of like, you know, in my own little zone right now. And I'm also putting together a Southern Soul project too. I'm calling it New Southern Soul. It's kind of cutting edge between R&B and blues.
Okay.
Right on the cutting edge of that. So basically I'm going to have two projects out, you know, and just kind of going in that direction. That just kind of gives me a little room to kind of, you know, experiment a little bit with some blues, because that's part of my MO, and I've come up listening to that with blues and a little R&B, little soul type thing. You know, I got that type of thing going on too. So I'm going to try to play two different markets, you know. I know the South will definitely go for that. I hear that Southern Soul is really big in the South, you know.
Right.
So I'm gonna try to work that angle as well. But the R&B project is definitely you know, where it needs to be. So I mean, I'm not done with it. I'm still recording, but I'm just putting it together. I'm taking things out, adding things, taking things out. You know, like you do with the production in the songs. You have to constantly, okay, this is it. You know, and more you maneuver it, you know, up until the time it's released, then, you know, it'll be real, real tight. So
right.
I'm just, you know, just kind of pushing my thing through, you know, trying to stay current, keeping my ear to the street, you know, listening to music. I kind of keep my radio tuned to a lot of the alternative music now, because that's where it's going, actually.
It is.
This pop is becoming the new R&B, you know.
It is.
So it's you know, I'm trying to just kind of tune in and keep my ear to a lot of that, and I'm trying some ideas with that too as well. But that more so for other artists, maybe younger artists and stuff like that, you know, than myself, you know. But I'm definitely trying to be all over the place with it, man. You know, my dad once told me, he said, "Son, if you stay in the way, something will hit you." So I try to stay in the way, man. Every time, you know, I'm planting seeds everywhere. You never know where it's going to grow. You know, I work with artists and producers and songwriters and you know, and, you know, fail with you, you know, what you going to charge? I said, man, come on in. Are you serious? If you're serious like I am and we can put together something that's hot, then we don't have to worry about charging anything. Let's just get in. Let's work. Let's make something hot. And then let's deal with that later. So
right.
A lot of people know me for that. I just get in and we work hard and we come up with something hot. Then it's like, okay, we seem like we got something here now. Let's, you know,
right.
But, I try to keep my plate clean, try to keep my nose clean and keep a good rapport with everybody, a lot of producers and songwriters and stuff like that. And, you know, and that way, you know, I think everything will work out. The PA thing, I've kind of disbanded myself from that. I think the guys are still moving forward. As far as I'm concerned, I heard that they were still doing some things. And so I give them guys my blessings, want to show them some love. Earl, Glenn, and Marquet, those are my brothers, and want to show them some love. And keep on doing what you're doing. I'm definitely supporting you, you know, and I want you guys to continue to support me as well, you know.
No doubt, man.
Yeah. Also, I'm sorry, but the label that I'm doing this project off is called EMAC Records, founded by Aubrey Morris. They're based out of Phoenix, Arizona, so they're funding the project for me, and things are going along really, really well, you know, really well. You know, I do the Facebook thing, the YouTube, the Twitter, and all that kind of stuff as well. So,
right.
You know, if you want trying to get up with me, boom, 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 there it is, and, you know, it's what it is.
Excellent. Well, Felly, man, it's been a pleasure talking with you, brother. Man, I'm so glad you came on the show and chopped it up with me, man.
Oh, no doubt, Spud. It's always good, baby. I got to get back. You know, I guess after the project is out and, you know, we hitting the airwaves a little harder, then, you know, we'll be able to chop it up a little more.
Oh, no doubt, man. You definitely got a spot here at the Producer's Corner, man. I want you back, so.
Absolutely.
So, man,
Absolutely.
Hey, we'll keep in touch, man. We'll get together, man, and, you know, we'll check out and get something popping, man.
Okay, that's what it is, but.
All right, fella. You take it easy, man.
Do the same, B.
All right.
Wah.
Bye. And, man, a big shout-out to Felony Davis coming on the show and sharing his expertise and knowledge, man. Yet another great display of artistry, man. I mean, he's been with a successful R&B group, Public Announcement, man. Now he's working his way and merging into as a solo artist, man. And, again, man, I know he's just going to do a great job, man. You know, he comes from a good background of R&B melodic structure and a great foundation of what R&B represents, in my opinion. So, you know, I can't wait to see what he has to offer us in the future, man. And for more information and to hear some of his music, man, check out his MySpace page at myspace.com/fdavismusic. And again, that's www.myspace.com/fdavismusic. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up as well, www.sput2typemusic.ning.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast. So if you have an iTunes player, go to the iTunes store, click on the podcast, and type in the Producer's Corner with Sput Too Tight. Click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And I want to thank everybody for joining in and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.